Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnistry Inc. Proudly present, No Borders, No Race, The World's J-Pop and Alternative Hotspot.
Welcome to all my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders of Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck, and once again, joining me on this episode are my good buddies from Wicked Anime, Andrew and Jonathan Fleming.
Hey, yeah, it's us.
Hello.
Yes, again. So, today we're going to be talking about the Boston Festival of Indie Games, the third annual one, because this was the first year that you guys had a chance to check it out, am I correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, before we get into, like, the whole, you know, song intro and the songs and to the whole games that we tried out, with this being your first Boston Fig, what was your overall, like, expectations for it before you jumped into it?
Oh, that's, I was expecting, even though it's, like, an indie event, there still seemed to be a lot more companies that were there that were highly developed, digital gaming, anyways. I thought that I was gonna see a lot more, like, a lot more low key stuff, but the gaming industry itself nowadays is becoming pretty powerful as a standalone, like, independent company type of thing.
What I liked about this year's setup was, you know, they kept the whole indie game aspect, especially in the digital aspect, mm-hmm. in the center, like right in center, and then they kept the more bigger companies just along the side, so people would, you know, still be focusing on what's happening right in the middle in that gymnasium.
Yeah. For me, it seemed as though it was pretty much exactly what I expected. The gaming room was really cool, or the digital gaming room, I should say, was pretty cool. But as far as, like, the whole event went, because it was it's still a young event, it met my expectations, I should say. Like, so it was really cool. It was a lot of fun.
You know, I couldn't agree more with you, because I go to a lot of conventions. I go to a lot of gaming ones, a lot of anime ones. I feel like that this Boston Festival of Indie Games was, like, the first convention that I've been to in a really long time where I just felt like I was having fun from start to finish. I don't know if it was because it was just a one-day event instead of something that's been dragged out to 3 days, but, you know, I didn't feel exhausted by the end of it. I just felt like I had just a big dose of fun while there.
I agree with you there, too, because, I mean, Andrew and I were having so much fun that we actually stopped focusing on making a video, like a really good video for the event. We just wanted to do stuff.
It was definitely a one-day event. Like, you could do everything you wanted to do in that one day that they gave you, which was perfectly fine with me. That's not, like, a negative thing at all. Like, it was just perfect in, like, its little bite-sizedness.
Yeah, because I did the interview with the co-directors, and they said that was their main, like, their main goal was to just have this event just one day, maybe 2 days in the near distant future, but they don't want to do something that'll be dragged out for, like, a whole long period of time, that by the time you're done with it, you just want, you know, nothing to do with it by the end of it.
Yeah.
But We're going to be talking about some of the games that we played, both in the digital and the tabletop, because you got to give it up for the tabletop gaming this year, because I was so impressed by the lineup that we saw there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But before we start off, we're going to jump into our first song, and remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these albums and EPs from cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. And we are going to start the show off with a little Sibomato, something to get into the groove of things, if you know what I mean, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. So this duo just released Hotel Valentine earlier this year, an album about love, ghosts, room service, and everything else in between. And they are also on tour right now with dates being shown right now on, yeah, basically Sibomato.com. The name of the song from Hotel Valentine is called Tent for Ghost Girl.
Are you scared? Or it's kind of sexy. If you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Chorus with Laser Beam from 2008's Smile album. The band just released a brand new record called Noise, and I urge all of you to give a good listen to it because it is really cool. Are you guys a fan of like experimental metal of sorts?
Yes. You said experimental, and that
one of my favorite bands ever. It was an experimental rock band.
Which one?
Tubbering.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
Tubbering, if you don't know Tubbering, I have all of their CDs. I will introduce you to them.
Excellent. Maybe it'll be good enough for me to play on my show next time or in the future.
You bet.
Awesome. So, back to Boston Festival of Indie Games. Let's talk about the digital aspect. Let's talk about the actual video games. And the first game I feel like we should talk about is the one, I think was the first one that we all played together as a group. Rain World.
Yeah, Rain World. That was a lot of fun. I love multiplayer games, man. I didn't get to play it because I was filming it, but it was sure fun to watch. It was a laugh. It was a game. It was a barrel of laughs.
Because this was a very similar demo to what I played back at PAX East, but it felt a lot more polished. The controls felt a lot better, and you just really get into this game. For those of you who don't know, and I've had the guy on my show on a couple times, but one of the co-creators of the game, James, who was one half of this awesome chiptune band, Bright Primate.
Oh yeah, that's right. We still have to check them out.
But this game, Rain World, it just keeps looking better and better and better as the game has been developed.
Also, they had a huge following and were picked up by Adult Swim Games, which is pretty badass.
Yeah, it is. And it's amazing how the story was that Adult Swim Games was trying to contact them, but they had no way of doing so until they put the game onto Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So, for those of you who haven't been keeping track of this game, it's about a slug cat, and it's, Metroidvania?
Yeah, Metroidvania. That's a really, really popular playstyle nowadays.
It is. I'm very surprised by how such an old-school style of gaming is still keeping up with the popularity.
Absolutely.
And what I liked about, the multiplayer aspect is just, again, you get so into it. Like, we're screaming at the screen as we're grabbing the spears and trying to kill one another, or trying to avoid those weird-looking, what are they called? Those monsters that are trying to eat you. And it was just so much awesomeness in that one little game.
Yeah, and cute, too.
Yeah, very cute, too.
Cute and horrifying at the same time.
Horrifyingly adorable.
Absolutely. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of just horrifying. Like when you take those cute things and you make the monsters eat them in the nastiest kind of most violent way you can think of. That's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, my little slug cat was thrown around a couple times. I know that. Oh yeah, and then I was also viciously speared in the face by my own slug cats.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of the game too. You know, you're supposed to help out each other, then stab each other in the back at the end.
Yeah, there was even a round in the multiplayer thing, which was what they called the revenge round, where you just kind of got out of the hole that you're living in and just kill each other and then go back into the hole.
I was still pissed off with that one time when I, spawned up and he angled me so much to the right that I just wound up falling off and dying.
Yeah. I could not play on those stages where there was a bottomless pit at the bottom because I fell into it every time.
Yeah. But one of the other games that we got to try, one that you guys got really excited for, was Flamingo.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Which you actually filmed us playing.
Yes.
Just a super addicting game. Oh, my gosh.
We could play that for hours.
So it's a Mexican standoff game where you set up your gunners like right before the shoot-off begins, and you try to kill everybody else while at the same time trying to take as much money as you can.
Yeah, basically the way that you played it, if everybody remembers the Microsoft Checkers game where you just kind of started a new game and you were playing somebody online, it's kind of like that. You just kind of are matched up with somebody. You make your move, and then it reveals what the other person does for their move. And, oh my gosh, so much fun.
Yeah, and there's like four rounds per map, and the map is randomized every time. The banks are put in different places. Sometimes there's a chicken, and you can't shoot past the chicken. Like, so.
It's like a game that you would find on one of those addicting game websites.
Like Newgrounds.
Yeah. You find it on Newgrounds.
There's some good games on Newgrounds. That's where Super Meat Boy got his start.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true.
So, outside of those two games that we talked about so far, what other titles in the digital aspect were you excited to play, and what like really took your breath away?
Well, we were also really interested in Albino, Lullaby.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Horror game for the Unreal Engine 4.
We actually got a press release of the demo from the guys over there. They sent it to us. They sent it to us not too long after the event.
Yeah, they sent it to me too, but because I don't have a PC, I can't play it.
Yeah, we're gonna pass it along to the Nerdy Show guys, because on Nerdy Show they have a show called Beta Test. So, and they gave us permission to send it over to the Nerdy Show, which is pretty awesome.
Ah, fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, when I was first looking at this game, you know, you're being chased by these creepy looking like disembodied heads that are
they're kind of like Easter Island heads, but human flesh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is a horror game, and the way that the guys explained it was pretty awesome, where it's not like blood and gore, ooga booga booga horror. It's like suspenseful Alfred Hitchcock kind of horror.
It's atmospheric.
It's kind of like how they did that Slender the Arrival game, where that wasn't that gory, but it's the whole, you can't be like, you can't have, you know, Slenderman capture you. In the same way that these disembodied heads, which are being called grandchildren in this game.
You're just constantly looking over your shoulder is basically how it works.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like they appear out of nowhere. They're like slow moving, and that's what makes it scarier, because when you find a spot that you can't escape from, and they're just coming closer and closer and closer, and it just gets to that inevitable point that death is about to, you know, come at you.
Yeah. So you have to kind of remember, guys, that if you want to check out Albino Lullaby, they still have a Kickstarter going on. So you should definitely help them out with that.
Well, let's see how long it's been going for, because I know, last I checked, it was going through its final hours, I thought.
Oh, yeah?
Because let me see, as of this recording, because we're recording right now on Saturday for our listeners, and, there's 2 hours to go, and they are $134 away from being pledged.
Oh, they better make it.
They better make it, I agree.
After Albino Lullaby was, oh, geez. Because we played a couple things that were pretty cool. I think one of the things that we all kind of had a blast playing was that sexting adventure.
Sexting adventure. That was funny. That was super funny.
Well, and the thing is, it was supposed to be funny. That's what the developer told us.
But she was super surprised at the fact that we were the first group who played it that were actually laughing at it.
Yeah, we were like looking over your shoulder as you were playing, and like we were laughing, and she was surprised that we were like, she's like, you guys are the most giggliest group that's come through, and we were like, oh crap, did we just insult our game? Like, are we seriously supposed to be sexting? It's like, she's like, no, that's good, it's supposed to be goofy. We're like, oh good, because I don't really want to have a serious sex adventure with a computer.
We're not in a Spike Jonze film.
So that was pretty fun, especially because, we just, you know, you were playing it and we were looking over your shoulder. We filmed it for a little while and
I was like, here, do you guys want to give it a try? And you're like, no.
Yeah, it's like, we get the gist of it.
I think one of the coolest demos that we saw there was Synthesis.
Oh my gosh.
Oculus Rift?
Yeah, the Oculus Rift 2 demo. These guys, only two guys were there, but they both had a very clear understanding of how the entire program worked.
They were brothers.
Yeah, it was basically a demo for their own created engine for the Oculus Rift 2 dev kit. And it was a program where you could create, like, they called them quote-unquote nanobots, where you could connect the nanobots together to make 3D sculptures. And if you put on the Oculus Rift, you can look at it in a 3D space. If you walk, you can get up and walk around it, almost like you could reach out and touch it. It was a really realistic look at, almost like an Iron Man computer.
Yeah, just about. And I made the comment of, like, if they could, like, turn this into, like a laser show of sorts, it could be, like, a virtual 3D party.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
so cool.
I came up with the solution on how to make that happen.
Fog machines everywhere.
No, what you do is... although maybe that could help out a little bit with the atmosphere. What you do is you have this whole party set up, and you have everybody wear the Oculus Rift. But on the tip of the Oculus Rift will be a 1080p camera, so you'll be able to still see everything that's around you. And then from within that's when you start up the program, and the whole laser show thing starts with the molecules and all that fun stuff, and... it's just one big laser show that everyone sees at once. No one has their own personal one.
Mm. Yeah, just so almost like augmented reality.
Yeah, exactly. Augmented reality within the Oculus Rift.
Within virtual reality.
Augmented reality within virtual reality, yes.
Ooh. That's deep, man.
I think those guys need to do that.
Yeah.
There's a way for them to attach a camera to the Oculus Rift, right at, like, say, like, between, like, the eyes, like, right above the nose in that section, because I think that's where the best, like, peripheral vision would be for something like that. I think that could become a reality.
Dude, if these guys are smart enough to be able to make synthesis on their own, they can figure out a way to do it augmented reality for sure.
I couldn't agree more. Now, one other game that I tried out, and I can't remember if you guys had a chance to play it, but Black Hat Oculus.
No, we didn't.
So, with this one person is at a computer screen, and they're looking at the above map of everything. And then the other person wearing the Oculus Rift is seeing the world from the first-person perspective. And it's up to the guy at the computer to tell the person wearing the Rift where they have to go, which puzzle pieces to pick up, and how to evade, like, all the obstacles and the security people that are trying to kill you. And the only way that you can communicate with the person wearing the Rift, although it was a lot easier to talk to them when they were right there, but if you're playing the game, you can only do it via typing in everything. You can only do it via, like, typing in the words and such.
Oh, man, that sounds stressful.
It does, but it's a very cool experience. Like, I thought it was really neat doing the whole Rift thing. I wasn't able to try the whole computer aspect of it because the person I was partnered with started getting motion sickness like 2 minutes into it.
Lightweight.
Yeah. No kidding. So that was a little bit disappointing. But what other games got you interested? What else, like popped into your peripheral vision while you're there at the Boston Festival of Indie Games?
Well, we didn't get to play it or anything like that, but I did see a demo for an Usagi Yojimbo game.
I actually have that game on my iPad, so I'll have to have you play it when you come over next time.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of what the game was called, but they didn't actually have a playable demo, but it was just a video on repeat. Remember those people who were out to lunch that had that, like, Ghost in the Shell-esque cyberpunk game?
Yeah.
And the animation was gorgeous.
I wish they were not on lunch. I really wanted to play that game.
Yeah, I don't know if you could play it, though. It looked like they were... it was, like, very, very video as much as what they had. Like, because they didn't have, like, any controller set up or anything like that.
Yeah, but it was a 16-bit game, and the animation that they put into it was beyond anything that was in the 16-bit era of video games.
Right. Although, I think the only game I can think of that would have something like that was Vector Man on the Sega Genesis.
Yeah.
Vector Man is the best game ever. My phone makes Vector Man sounds when I get emails.
That's like a game that's like near the top of my list that I would love to see a reboot. Like, Sega really needs to get on that, or whoever it was that created it.
You know, did you know that they were supposed to do that for the PlayStation 2 and it looked awful? Like, they had like this god-awful Vector Man rehash, like, and like he has guns and he's not an Orbot anymore. It's just stupid.
Sounds like what they did to Bomberman.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
So maybe it's best that we didn't get that reboot, but if they could create one that is along the same lines as the ones that we played back in the Sega Genesis, that would just really make me happy.
Yes.
I mean, if something like Strider can come back, so should Vector Man.
Very true. I love Vector Man.
Yeah. All right, here's the name of the game. Osagi Yojimbo, Way of the Ronin. That's the game title that you were looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, that seemed pretty cool, one that I would play. Let's see, there was also one in the similar style as the Usagi Yojimbo was Banff.
Oh, yeah, that's
which
right.
Which was a side-scrolling game, which, Evan, you said that you have on your iPad.
Yep, I have that on my iPad as well, too. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of got that sort of a Streets of Rage, Double Dragon type of feel to it, but it's all touchscreen-based.
Streets of Rage. That's another second.
Saying all the same words again.
Oh, if you love Streets of Rage, you should have played Saints Row 4, because there is a level where you play something that is right out of Streets of Rage.
That's awesome.
What were your thoughts on Blocks of Explosive Dismemberment?
Honestly,
it was rough.
Yeah, the game was very, very, very alpha. The camera movement was awful. The animation was really rough. The textures were okay, but they were also really rough. The
Tetris aspect of it was good, but just the other side.
Yeah, when you were playing the actual Tetris, like trying to knock off the player being crushed by blocks, that ran so smoothly and so great. It also felt a little unbalanced.
Yeah, it was very unbalanced, but
it was pretty balanced, because you switched and it calculated.
You got equal chance, I suppose.
So, but the thing was, when you played as in the 3D view, and you were the character running around in the thing, I didn't even look at the character. I looked at the minimap, because the minimap was like the 2D view.
It almost seemed like unnecessary to
run as a person. Yeah, because the camera was just so bad and it was terrible. I couldn't do it.
So, say you were given a chance to fix it. What would you do in order to make it a much better experience?
I would take the camera that he had
and just make it a 2D.
Just make it a 2D camera. So basically, you have the Tetris screen, but it's all 3D rendered and textured, and it can look nice. You actually have the character running around. Yeah. And everything, but the camera doesn't move. The camera is just zoomed in a little bit and follows the character, and your character just runs back and forth. Because there's really no necessary reason that your character should be able to move in both X and Y. Your character really only needs to move in X. Or, I'm sorry, X and Z. Your character really only needs to move in Z. And that's 3D lingo. instead of moving, you know, left, right, up, down, back, front, just move left and right, you know? Right. So that would fix it. And then if the camera was zoomed in a little bit on your character so you could see your character a little bit better,
you could still get all the gory details in.
Yeah, you can still get all the gory details, and you can jump in, and we'll still have the challenge because you can't see the blocks falling in you. And so that would keep the use of the minimap that he has. So you'd keep the minimap to see where the blocks are falling, but your camera that with the 3D view playing as the character would just be running around back and forth, and without all the extra bells and whistles that are really unnecessary that he had in that game. So
that would make it a much better gameplay experience.
Yeah, he had a lot of fixing to do, but I'm not sure if anybody actually ever gave him that critique yet, and that was the critique he really needed.
Well, I did mention it on my article on the website, and he did read it, so odds are he knows that it is an issue right now.
Yeah. But overall, it was a creative idea for a game. I like the fact that most of the games that we saw there were multiplayer.
Yeah, they most of them had those like this person does, like, basically neither of the people playing the multiplayer. It was a multiplayer game, but both people were doing something completely different. You know, you aren't going head to head by doing the same thing with each other.
Yeah.
So if you were to choose out of all the games we played, which would be your digital game or show?
Oh, Flamingo.
Flamingo.
I would say Albino Lullaby. Well, but and then there was Rain, the Slug Cats. But I didn't get to play that. I only watched you guys play.
Yeah.
I don't know. They were all so different. I don't know if it's really fair to say one was better than the other.
I would say that I would competently buy Albino Lullaby, though, because it felt like it was going to turn into a full game.
Yeah. So I'm just going to say top three: Albino Lullaby, Flamingo, and Rain Worlds.
All right. So I would say for my top three, definitely Albino Lullaby. Rain World, and I would have to say Black Hat Oculus. Those okay. were my top three.
Cool. Very good.
All right. So, when we come back, we will talk more about tabletop gaming, something that, for the first time ever, I was very excited to check out.
Mm-hmm.
But first, we're going to spin something from Bus Driver's newest album, Perfect Hair. He's once again crafted a rap album that puts many others in the game to shame, as his vernacular flows rhymes as fast as water spewing from a broken dam. This song is called Motion Points.
I don't want to ruin your ball gown, cause I'm not feeling law bound. You could probably cough the grind of my body mind to a psychotropic compound. A nice age will fall before I'm able to play ball. Your cryptotexts are state law. You have to read like an algebraic straw, but I know you're gone. After that gut wrenching shout match, am I out to whack a palm read? Got me on leave in this outback with some lounge act. I don't cross breed with my own weeds. Mousetrap it up a smirch to the weekend. I'm like a jerk attempting to twerk for the church of pain. My advice stays so Socratic. Don't panic, I'm looking like a dope addict, cause I'm the press of shit. I know a nap, the capricious lover as a migrant bird. Your absence caused quiet stirs to progress into a violent dirge. A victim blaming and miscellaneous scripts, the proof of discourse foolish. Have a heart to explain to me, I was drawing the corners by hoarse voices. Well, you forgot to listen to me when I said, I'm impossible to love and cannot keep an open mind. So you left me where I was, so shredded in your motion lines. I'm impossible to love and cannot keep an open mind. So you left me where I was, getting shredded in your motion lines. Motion lines.
We never touched on it, what we left to be enough, ain't enough to brush with it. We never touched on it. We never touched on it. We never touched on it. What we left to be enough, trained enough, and a brush with it. We never touched on it. We never touched on it.
Yeah. Yo. This shit is depressing, man. Get over it. Slice at the knuckle where the mind bends, and I become a motherfucker, fucker times 10. Crises all look enormous, but the body suffers a sugar shortage. I'll cook a swordfish or prep any gourmet fiber to stimulate your gray matter. Girl, this rap shit left me worse for wear, and I ain't got that perfect hair. My love feels like a cervix tear, but you kiss me by my desk light. You look like my next wife. You look like my next wife. You look like my next wife. I'm here burning midnight oil, sucking grab the dust and the cotton swabs. Every turn I get tight coils of human waste as toothpaste.
Yeah, girl.
Oh, I get it. I'm old news. A motherfucker brontosaurus. And to think that I am fighting you to my underwater forest.
Real shit.
A thousand fucked you sprung loaded in a ball of fist. I open my palms to my eyelids to come to the fall pussy lips. I deserve it.
Yeah.
I'm impossible to love and cannot keep an open mind. So you left me where I was, so shredded in your motion lines. I'm impossible to love and cannot keep an open mind. So you left me where I was, getting shredded in your motion lines. Motion lines.
We never touched on it. What we left to be enough, treated love and a brush with it. We never touched on it. We never touched on it. What we left to be enough, trained enough, and a brush with it. We never touched on it.
deal from their 1999 album, Happy Bivouac. This was the very first Pillows album I owned, and I still cherish it to this day. Last week was the band's 25th anniversary, a huge milestone for any musician.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Fooly Cooly that got you into them? Like, how
easy? Yes. Fooly Cooly, oh my gosh, like, everything about that anime got me into the Pillows. I watch that show to listen to Pillows music because it flows. It's like one long music video. It's so good.
It's like the Pink Floyd The Wall of the anime.
Yeah, it's their rock opera. It's the Pillows rock opera.
I got to see the Pillows play at Anime Boston 2008. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, my first time seeing them was at the Knitting Factory in New York City, 2005. I still have the ticket stub that's just hanging on my wall. And meeting Sawao Yamanaka was one of my biggest highlights, just of my life in general.
Cool. That's what's up.
Because for people who don't know, it was his quote that my show No Borders, No Race comes from, where he said, "I believe good music has no borders, no race, and is timeless."
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's why I call the show No Borders, No Race.
I had no idea.
Do, do, wow. Do, do. Learning and growing.
Growing.
All right, so going back to the Boston Festival of Indie Games, let's talk about tabletop and card games, because again, this was the first time I was really excited about tabletop and card games. Not only that, but the first time I ever walked away from an event with a purchased card game.
Yeah, here's my thing too. I said this quite a bit over the day of the event, but for some reason this year I really, really got into card games like Munchkin and King of Tokyo and all that kind of stuff. You know,
same
board
here.
Games, card games. Yeah,
I'm glad I'm not the only one who's thinking that stuff.
Tentacle Bento.
Tentacle Bento. Yeah.
So like one of the first ones I got to play, there's one that's currently on Kickstarter, and I highly recommend everyone check out. It's Moriarty's Machinations, where players either have to try and commit crimes or attempt to stop them, with two of the players, one of which is Jack the Ripper, another like a famous police officer, trying to figure out which of the other players is either Sherlock Holmes or Moriarty. With everyone trying to deceive one another. It's, have you ever played the card game Werewolves?
I don't think so.
So Werewolves is, there's people that are humans, and then there's people who are werewolves.
Oh, like Mafia. We call the game Mafia.
Okay. The werewolves try to knock out the humans, and the humans try to knock out the werewolves. Whoever is left is, you know, the winner.
Yep.
And I had so much fun playing this game because you got into it in a very similar style to another game we're going to talk about a little bit later on, where you have to come up with the crime before you start to commit it. Like, it's not on the cards. It's something that you have to think up.
Wow.
So you have to decide whether or not that this crime succeeds or fails, or if you even try to attempt it in the first place. Currently, right now, I think it's about 50% reached its Kickstarter goal, so if you really want to find another really good card game, definitely give Moriarty's Machinations your money so they can actually make it happen.
Give them your money. That was something that I was really interested about this game, was that every board game that was there this year had a lot of creative entitlement to the player. One of the first games that Andrew and I played while we were there was a game called Producer.
Oh yeah,
that was a lot of fun.
I've been talking to the guy, the producer of Producer. His name is Daniel. I've been talking to him since the event ended, and he's, you know, just thanking us that we took the time to actually sit down and play his game with them and interview him about it. And you know, his Kickstarter is going. He basically started the Kickstarter the day of Boston Fig so that people who were there could go do it. And the second the event ended, he actually funded the event after. Like, at the end of the day. At the end of the day of Boston Fake, he was funded.
Wow.
Because he got so much exposure there. And the only way to get a copy of Producer is by pledging.
Alright, we got some breaking news. Albino Lullaby has reached his goal.
Yes.
Sorry, congrats, guys.
That was awesome. Congratulations.
All right. Cool. Now go back to Producer.
Yeah. So if you pledge at least $20 to producer, which
that's a really fair price.
Yeah, at this point, there's probably only like 16, 17 days left by this recording. You get a copy of producer, and that's the only way to get it, because after the Kickstarter is over, you don't. It's not being sold retail.
The way the game plays?
So the way the game plays is everybody draws a director, and sometimes your directors are genre-specific, sometimes your directors are attitude-specific, but it kind of dictates the way that your movie's going to play out. So as you continue on, you have a budget. Every turn that you have a budget that shows up, and that's actually placed on your director card. Your director card has, you know, your amount of dollars, and each turn you take, you spend all those dollars to buy cards, go to audition rooms, which there's a line of cards kind of like the river in poker.
Buy scenes, actors,
genres,
all this stuff.
And you can spend up to the amount that your budget has on your director card.
Per turn.
Per turn, yeah. And basically what you need is by the end of the game, you need to have an actor.
No, three.
Huh?
We play the short version, so we only did one of each. So you need to have three.
You need to have three of each.
You need to have three actors, three genre cards, three conflicts, and one resolution.
And one resolution.
I'm sure there's more, but I don't remember everything.
Yeah, and then after the game is over, after everybody has resolved their movies, you wrap. And you make a couple more ticket sales because of if you wrap. And then basically you yourself
pitch your movie.
Yeah, with all your cards lined up in a row like storyboards, have to pitch your movie to the rest of the people that are playing. And after you're done pitching your movie, every player has their own movie ticket. And everybody throws their movie ticket to whoever's movie they would go see, and that adds up to your points. And then at the very end, you add up all your points, all your ticket sales, as they call them. And whoever does that is the box office winner.
I understand that one of you did a Not Mad Max movie.
That was me. I made Not Mad Max, yes. There was a submarine in the middle of the desert. It is all recorded, so, and if the audio stands out, I will probably try to animate that. It would be pretty funny.
I would love to see that. Producer is on Kickstarter right now, and fortunately, it has already reached its $2,000 goal.
Yes.
So it's now already being made.
But you have to remember that you will not get a copy of the game unless you pledge.
Really?
Yeah, so you have to pledge at least $20 to get a copy of the game.
Which is a very fair price for the amount of content that you get with it, by the way.
Okay.
But the game is really fun. If you have the money to spare, which unfortunately I don't, my only option right now is to share the fact that he's, you know, making the game on Kickstarter. That's my only option.
Somebody local buy it, we'll play it with you.
And guess what I'm doing right now?
Aw, yeah. Mr. Evan Moneybags.
Well, don't call me Mr. Evan Moneybags. It's just, you know, I'm starting to get into this whole card game thing, and I really want to, you know, start playing more and such, so
I'm sure we can. Yeah, I'm sure with producer we can make some pretty funny movies, especially like with us. Like, we can, especially because it's mostly four player, so it would be like me, you, Evan, and Sarah playing producer and just making these stupid movies. Stupid in a good way.
Yes. Now let's talk about Henchmen. Another really great card game.
That was the first game that we stumbled upon that we all ended up playing together.
The easiest way to explain Henchmen is it's Munchkin, basically. Yeah. Like, you play it a lot like Munchkin. For really those of you who don't know, you get a character. This one, you actually get a team of henchmen, and you equip them with equipment, and then you go commit crimes.
Yeah, and then and you have two actions per turn, and there's three actions to choose from. There's hire a henchman, gather loot, and go do a crime. And then after, if you complete a crime with your henchman that you lock and load, you put him into Thug Life, which is pretty funny.
Every card, by the way, is a parody of something. So you have like Not Deadpool. And
not Homer Simpson.
Not Homer Simpson.
Slade from Teen Titans.
So basically, after everybody takes a turn, you have to go talk to the boss, and there's a stack of boss cards. And basically, whoever did not complete a job, well, sometimes it works for the people who didn't complete a job, but basically you flip a card over every time and the boss tells you your penalties, whether you, you know, completed a job or did not. It's really funny. Some of the cards are really, really funny. Okay. And then after you complete a job, you have to watch out for the super jerk, who is the superhero. So if you complete a job, and then that job has to be replaced in the river.
So you draw out a new card, and there's...
Yeah, and if it shows up as the super jerk, half of your henchmen die.
Who are in the thug life.
And you do not get the cash that you want.
For the job?
Yeah, for the job. I don't believe you do. I can't remember.
Can I say that the character super jerk sounds like something I would love to see in Glove and Boots?
Yeah, I agree. And then once three super jerks fills up the river, the game is over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that game was pretty simple, but I know a
I could only play like the first 10 minutes of it because I had to run off and do another appointment, but from what I played,
yeah, right.
It was just so much fun. Just, even with you have like these two other little kids' brothers who were in the midst of like a sibling rivalry.
Yeah. And I was teaming up with people I didn't know to pull off jobs. Kid actually ended up winning.
Yeah, the guy from the other game booth.
He knew how to play it up, man.
Yeah, you could tell that he was a Munchkin player.
Oh yeah.
So that was fun. That was a really good game. The people who ran it were really, really nice.
Okay. So let's talk about the game that we all walked away with.
The game that we threw money down at the second we started playing it.
Slash Romance Without Borders.
Ugh.
So when we first played it, it was just the whole simple, oh, who would be great with this character? Who would be great with that character? But then when Glenn came and was like, all right, here's another way to play it.
Yeah, hardcore. And that's the only way I'm ever going to play it.
Agreed,
now.
Because it's the most fun and the most creative.
Yeah, let's start off with telling what the game is actually like. The most basic version to play it is it's apples to apples or cards against humanity, where a matchmaker throws down a card, everybody secretly throws down another card to see what the best OTP would be, or one true pairing.
It's right. Fan fiction the game. Yep. You're making your own crack fan fiction.
Now, the hardcore version of it is the matchmaker throws down a character and a reason for other people to love them.
Yeah.
For example, the best example that we got was Glenn threw down Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat.
Ooh, yeah.
And he asked the question, who is the person who melted his ice-cold heart? And we all had to come up with a way to do that. And I ended up with trying my luck with Velma from Scooby-Doo, who was the first and only person to unmask his feelings.
Ah, jinkies. I had a baby houseman from Dirty Dancing, and I said that now, as we all know, Sub-Zero is a fan of Flashdance, and Baby only knows how to dirty dance. But because Baby loves Sub-Zero so much, she learned how to Flashdance and Flashdance his way into Sub-Zero's heart.
Aw.
Was I the one who got Dr. House for that one?
Yes.
I was Dr. House. He went in because he wanted to be cured from this ailment of this frozen heart.
It was not lupus.
I still say my favorite one still was when you play Godzilla.
No, I played Donatello.
You played Leonardo. Yeah, you played Donatello.
I played Donatello. Yeah.
And it was like, who would be the best person to have pizza with them? And I played down Godzilla because not only does he like pizza, but he also likes eating pizza restaurants.
And he's green.
And he's green.
All the characters were green except for Helen Keller.
Yeah.
I know. We had Godzilla thrown down, Poison Ivy,
which was a good match because, one, she's vegetarian like Donatello, and she's green.
Yeah, and then
She-Hulk.
She-Hulk was the one that I chose because that was the funniest story. She was just like, I forget, I really wish I remember the story that the girl, because this was a girl we didn't know. So good.
But yeah, she was so creative. Yeah, her explanation was so funny because she, for one thing, she surprised us by throwing down another green character.
Yeah,
and
which was the third in a row.
Yeah, and was like, plus if they do this and this and this, which is copyright infringement. She's a lawyer, so they can't get sued.
Yeah,
like, and then, it was so funny.
And then I threw down the creeping something. I forget. It's an H.P. Lovecraft monster.
Oh yeah, it was the invisible monster.
And
yeah.
And he has tree trunk size footprints, which is the only way that you can follow him is because he's invisible. His visible feature, he's also green. Nobody can argue that.
Yeah,
with
nobody
me.
Can
so
dispute that
in your face.
He's invisible.
But he was also proficient at stomping pizza dough because of his very large feet. So,
yeah. So as you can tell, needless to say, we had a blast coming up with our own fan fiction to crack
these
people.
And we almost passed by it. The reason why we found it was we were talking with these dice roller guys. These guys who made custom dice roller
who we
filmed
again.
Yeah, who we filmed a gag with.
Yeah, and they were like, have you guys tried Slash? It's basically apples to apples, but with fan fiction. And we were like, what?
Which I have heard of Slash before.
Yeah, I did too, I
heard about Slash when it first showed up as a Kickstarter campaign. And then I'd never heard of it again. And then, like, when I found out that it was there, I was like, holy crap.
And it's funny because, you know, we were going to go to the table, all right, let's try this. It'll be like 15, 20 minutes. We've been there for almost like an hour and a half playing this game.
Yeah, we were. And then David from I Am Think showed up and we like talked with him for like hours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was there on his anniversary with his wife and son.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. That's an awesome anniversary.
It totally is.
Remember, that guys, ladies, if you want your guy to, like, have an awesome anniversary, take him to a gaming convention.
She wanted to go. She was the one that wanted to go.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Oh, it's a win-win, then.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah. Everybody go to imthink.com and check out them. Those guys are awesome.
Agreed. Like, we've hung out with them at Anime Boston. They are really pretty cool cats.
They are awesome. They are so cool.
They weren't there as press this time around. They were just there to have fun.
Yeah, but we'll see him as press at Anime Boston again.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
And another anime con.
Yeah, AAC. So, yeah, you'll have to hook up with them there, Evan.
Oh, yeah, hopefully, yeah. I'll see if I can find him there. So were there any other tabletop card games that really stood out for you this year?
I think we hit them all. Yeah, I wanted to play them all, mind you. We just did not have the time.
Yeah, that was all of them that we played. They had a few other cool looking ones, like the mech one.
Yeah.
And like there was one where you built a mech.
There were a couple mech games.
Yeah, there was one where you built a mech out of cards, and that one wasn't as thrilling.
And then there was a hex game.
There was a tactical hex game that actually had mech figurines, like miniatures. Like, I was like, no way. That's so cool.
I would totally go to a convention that was all board games. Like, even if, like, forget the digital stuff, if there's a board game convention, I'm going to it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's been great about this convention here, because it just shows how great and creative the tabletop gaming industry has become.
Absolutely. And I think board games have only gotten better.
You know, we're finally seeing the masses and not just, like, the stereotypical niche crowd jumping into these games. You know, it's a very good change of pace, in my opinion.
Yeah.
People who would never touch something like Dungeons & Dragons or anything, now jumping into it and realizing how fun and creative it is. It's better than, not to bash video games or anything, but if I was given a chance to either play a video game where I stared at a screen with friends in the room, or be face-to-face with them with the tabletop or card game, I would go with the tabletop and card game, because I feel like you're going to have more of a conversation with these people doing that.
There's more choice and freedom involved.
Yep, I could not agree more with you, Evan. We've come a long way since Chutes and Ladders and Candyland.
Now, there's a way we can... there probably is someone who's already created Chutes and Ladders, Candyland, putting it together, and then making it into a role-playing game as Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, man. That'd be awesome.
Let's see. It'd be Dungeons and Dragons.
And Candyland.
And Candyland.
that's all you really need.
Yeah. All the dragons are eating the candy. You must slay them in order to have the candy for yourself.
You walk through the candy cane forest, and as you reach the end, you see the light through the glimmering red and white tree branches. You smell the thick smoke of molasses in the air.
Smoke of molasses?
I don't know.
Smoke of
yeah, the smoky molasses. I don't know.
Burning molasses, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. When I think of the molasses swamp, that it would be like bubbling and boiling, almost like lava. Smoky molasses.
So it wouldn't make you stuck, it would burn you to death.
Yes, it all would. Right.
Yeah. You're burning my molasses. What?
All right, guys. Thank you again for showing up on No Borders or Race, man, because this was great to have you go to the Boston Festival of Indie Games. And maybe my last question for you guys is, what did you learn from going to this event?
That they actually let us go to an indie game festival as Wicked Anime. We tricked them. No, not really.
That I actually learned that I haven't really been a part of the video game culture, you know, as a group event, you know, convention thing, but I really rather enjoy it, and I would definitely want to do more gaming stuff in the future.
Yes.
Excellent. Because for me, because this is the third year of it going, I've been going since the first, and it's just amazing how evolved the convention has already gotten. The very first year it started, it was in these two tiny rooms at the MIT Game Lab, and 15 minutes into it, it was like wall-to-wall people.
Nice.
Wow.
So, the second year, they had the digital games in the room where they had the tabletop this year. And then tabletop just had a very small, niche, tiny little corner. This year, I think they got the formula right.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Oh, it was awesome. I thought it was set up pretty
smart.
A floor
for each.
Yeah,
a floor
for each. It only takes MIT people to set up something smart, so, you know.
Because it's MIT. Maybe next year they could have, instead of people guarding them, they could have those robot cheetahs that they've been building there.
Yeah, the ones that don't fall over.
Oh, yeah, the ones that don't fall over.
I love cheetahs.
But yeah, I'm so excited by how much I enjoyed the Boston Festival of Indie Games, and I really need to thank them just for the overall experience. Thank them for giving such a great digital gameplay showcase. Thank them for the tabletop. And just thank them just because they exist in a world where indie games, you know, still sometimes are clouded over by, like, the AAA titles. I'm just happy that something like the Boston Festival of Indie Games exists, especially in our backyard.
Yes, it is so true.
Yes.
It's gonna be big in a couple of years.
I agree. I think that people are gonna be starting to look, they are now starting to look forward to more indie games than like over the AAA titles. Because yeah. you just see a lot more of them.
And usually a lot of these more indie titles have a lot more heart in these games rather than something like your Call of Duty or Battlefield.
The creativity sucking companies. Oops, did I say that out loud on the internet?
Alright, Andrew, Jonathan, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders, No Race. And let's do our usual kickoff thing where we just promote the crap out of all of our stuff.
Okay, so if you guys want to check out our stuff and see what we're up to over at Wicked Anime, you can go to Wicked Anime, wickedanime.com, youtube.com/wickedanimereviews, where that is our main show where we have all of our videos, latest videos on reviews and Japanese culture, whatever you may have. You can also find us at nerdyshow.com, where you can also find our videos, but you can also find our podcast there. Where you can also listen to the podcast there or on iTunes or SoundCloud. Which is SoundCloud/WickedAnime. You can also find us at Twitter.com. Tweet at us at YoWickedAnime. At YoWickedAnime, yo.
Don't add the second yo.
Don't add the second yo.
And then you can find us on Tumbles with tumblr.wickedanime.com or however that goes.
Wickedanime.tumblr.com.
Whatever.
We always get that one wrong.
I can never remember and I don't really care.
They'll figure it out.
And then, of course, you can find us at facebook.com/wickedanime, where we post all of our latest news, that most of our frequent news, any fun news stories we might find from around the internet, and anything that we find relevant that you guys would care about Wicked Anime.
Excellent.
That's it.
Alright, so now it's my turn. Remember, as always, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bass Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbassbrigade.com. You can follow me on Twitter at king_baby_duck, and on Tumbles at b3crew.tumblr.com. Like us on facebook.com/bostonbassbrigade, and don't forget about the other shows under the Land of Esh, including The Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and the Issues Program. Now, Andrew, Jonathan, do you have any idea what the next convention you guys are going to be going to?
Anime Boston, probably.
Probably Anime Boston?
That is the one that we can confirm definitely for sure.
All right. Maybe we should look into the Super Anime, you know, what was that? Super MegaCon, like last year.
Super Mega Fest, we could do that.
Oh, jeez.
We're going to be a lot farther away this year, though.
We can still drive to it.
Yeah, we could do that. Rhode Island Comic Con.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That when the weather starts getting cold, that's when Rhode Island Comic Con shows up.
Yeah, yeah. We got a couple options.
It's like reverse Groundhog Day for Rhode Island Comic Con. All right, guys, thank you again so much for being on the show.
And thank you for having us.
Yes, and today we're going to end things off with something cool to get you in the groove. It's Soil and Pimp Sessions. And this song comes from one of their earlier albums, Pimpin'. This is Wives and Lovers. And until next time, this is King Baby Duck,
Andrew from Wicked Anime,
and Jonathan from Wicked Anime,
reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but
it sure does help.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sure helps.